Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Generation Y ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today. Listen to a bold new take on George Orwell's classic 1984 on Audible, starring an epic cast with Andrew Garfield, Cynthia Erivo, and Andrew Scott, and featuring Tom Hardy as Big Brother. Plus, a haunting original score by Matthew Bellamy and Elon Ashkari that takes this thrilling production to the next level. Experience an immersive listening experience like nothing you've heard before. This chilling tale of constant surveillance, thought police, and rebellion is more relevant now than ever. Big Brother is watching and listening. Hear why those who control the past control the future. Listen to George Orwell's 1984 on Audible now. Go to audible.com/bigbrother.
We're brought to you by Audible. Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere, while traveling, working out, walking, or doing your chores. I usually listen to Audible when I'm on a plane because it's the best way to keep my mind off the boredom and claustrophobia of being in a plane. I'm currently listening to The Long Walk. It was one of Stephen King's first books that he wrote under Richard Bachman. It's an incredible story about teens who are volunteered to go on a long walk. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. Right now, new members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500. That's audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500. I just wanted to remind everybody to visit genypod.com, where you can donate, find merch, and purchase our premium episodes. What's a premium episode, you ask? Well, if you're one of our dedicated fans that have run out of episodes and need more, every month we put out additional content for a small donation that helps support the show. So please check out Gen Y Pod, and thanks again for listening. How are you doing tonight, Aaron?
I'm doing great, Justin. Thank you for asking.
Awesome. We have some thank yous and stuff to do.
We have a couple of people to thank. I know I might miss somebody, and we don't always do this, but on this episode, I wanted to thank Allie and Anna for suggesting the topic of this episode.
And what is this episode?
Is the death of Tina Watson, who was a woman on her honeymoon. Her husband was Gabe Watson, and they were to take this trip. Although the trip originally was going to be a graduation present, but it evolved into the honeymoon after Tina decided that she would love to go to Australia and she'd love to see the turtles, and Gabe wanted a scuba dive.
Because Gabe is a sort of avid scuba diver.
Well, it's definitely one of his interests.
Yeah.
We'll give you a quick summary. This couple vacations in Australia, and one of the weeks is essentially Tina's, and the other week is essentially Gabe's. In other words, they can kind of choose what they want to do. For Gabe, he wanted to dive, and by this he wanted to visit coral reefs, he wanted to visit a shipwreck, and so he contacted a company about taking them out for a dive, and while on this dive, his wife would drown. And he would return to the surface. There was a real question about, was it foul play or
a terrible accident?
Was it an accident?
Yeah.
So it's a who done it or if done it.
Yeah. So they are dating and they get married rather quickly.
It's within 2 years. They meet in 2001 and they're married in 2003.
That's actually normal time. That's not quickly at all, actually.
I guess it depends. You know, some people are in a hurry, especially, you know, some women would say their internal clock is ticking. A man might say, ooh, she's just perfect for me. Mm-hmm. So We don't know about the particulars of this, but there was some talk that there was a breakup sometime before they got married.
Mm-hmm.
But still, it's about 2 years they're married.
Yeah. The relationship could have been a little rocky. Now, he wants to marry Tina, and he wants to ask her father for permission. How does that go?
Well, he calls up Tina's father. His name is Tom, or Thomas, I should say. You know, he tells him, I want to marry your daughter.
Yeah.
Will you give me your hand in marriage? And he says, I will not do that over the phone. You have to meet me in person. So they arrange a meeting. And at the meeting, of course, Gabe asks again, and they have a conversation. But according to her father, he never gives the okay. He just discusses it with him. And it's quite clear that from the very beginning that they're, you know, her parents just aren't into Gabe.
Yeah.
But of course, they don't seem to have been into some of the previous boyfriends that she's had either.
And this is common, where it's a rarity, I think, when both in-laws or sides of the family love the other person. There's always, I don't like the person you're marrying, you could do better. That's always an ongoing theme in any family that is getting married.
It seems like it occurs fairly often. Her parents don't really seem to support the wedding much either.
Mm-hmm.
But Gabe's parents love her, and they're very supportive. In fact, for this vacation, Gabe's father and grandmother, they pay for most of the trip. And the trip costs $10,000.
Yeah, that's not cheap.
It's not a cheap trip. So they're in with her. They like her. And so they plan this trip. Now, you can't just go to a destination and start scuba diving. So how do they prepare for this? Well, Gabe has a bit of a background in scuba diving. The year of the trip, when they actually get married and go on vacation, is in 2003. He first starts diving in 1996, and he goes to a place, Blue Water Adventure.
Mm-hmm.
The instructor there is Tom Jackson. Now, between 1996 and 1999, he takes a number of courses, and he gets some certifications. He gets certified in open water. He gets certified in advanced open water, nitrox, and rescue. An overview of these is open water is just basic diving skills, what you need to know to go diving. Advanced open water, it makes you more well-rounded, gives you some additional skills, and then you're more qualified to go to additional dive sites, maybe more challenging dive sites. Nitrox is, it has to do with the kind of tank you're using.
Mm-hmm.
It's enriched air nitrix. So you'll learn about the benefits and hazards and proper procedures of using this.
It's just different equipment.
It's a special mixture so that you can dive deeper and longer, mm-hmm. basically. And it allows you, they say, to dive to depths of 130 FSW, which is feet of seawater.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the rescue portion is supposed to help you with self-rescue. So if you get in trouble, what you're supposed to do. If you have an accident, what you're supposed to do, how to treat yourself. But it also helps you do the same things for your fellow divers.
Yeah. But these titles sound a little bit more important than what they actually are to me.
Like, well, that's true. And well, the reason is because they require a day or two sometimes, or sometimes not even 2 days. And then some of them, you know, the amount of diving required to complete that certification isn't very much.
I would hear these titles and think this guy is an expert diver that could go anywhere and do anything. Just hearing these titles and a rescue certification, like, is he, you know, I picture somebody jumping out of a helicopter and rescuing people in the ocean. You know, that's the image I get, but not so much.
No. To give you an idea, he got these certifications well before he ever went out to Australia.
Mm-hmm.
And he wasn't using them. In fact, he only had one time where he had to help rescue another diver. And it was another diver who was not panicking and who assisted in his own rescue.
Mm-hmm.
So he was able to assist someone who was already competent and able to help somewhat. The number of dives that he had gone on, if you go by his dive computer and logbook, he has 56 recorded dives. But there are a good number of those that happen in very shallow, they're very shallow dives. So they're not even serious dives.
Like in a swimming pool.
Essentially, many of the dives happen in swimming pools or quarries, very controlled environments. And very few, and these happen well before he ever goes to Australia, are actually in seawater. So he doesn't really have a lot of experience. He loves diving, and he's gone diving, but he's not doing enough dives for anyone to say, oh, he's an experienced diver.
Yeah.
The number of dives he does, someone has remarked that they do that in a 3-month period.
Mm-hmm.
And it took him years to do this.
Yeah, almost a decade.
So that's Gabe. And Tina, this is well established. She is not a swimmer. And her comfort level in water is, you know, I would say it's very questionable. It seems like at least one of her friends, a friend named Amanda, said that Tina was, you know, she was going to train as a diver so that she could spend more time with Gabe because he wanted to dive more. And so if he was going to be diving, if she wanted to spend time with him, well, she probably would need to go with him because he was going to be setting aside time to dive.
Mm-hmm.
And so she started taking courses at Blue Water Adventure with Tom Jackson, just as Gabe did.
And she gets her dive equipment before she even starts taking these classes?
Yeah, she spends almost $2,000 and buys dive equipment. And I believe it doesn't include a tank. It's like everything you need. It has like a regulator, you know, your dive suit, etc. This is something she's going to be doing without actually having tried it.
Yeah, I wouldn't spend that kind of money without getting my feet wet first, but she is expecting to do this. How did her training go when she went to Blue Water Adventures?
Yeah, this is the bad part. So she goes and her first dive in a pool does not go well. They said she seemed very uncomfortable. And by the time she went to the quarry to do additional training, she was really freaked out. She wouldn't follow directions very well. When they were actually trying to teach her some skills, they would teach, like when Gabe did this, he was basically doing it by himself or with a really close friend.
Because he's comfortable.
Well, it was private training.
Yeah.
With her, they had other people there. And when it got to be her turn, they were testing, taking her through how to do something, and she flipped out. So she started ascending out of the water really quickly, and the dive master had to grab a hold of her. Now, the dive master is somebody who watches over the group. He keeps an eye on everybody to see if there's anybody who's a little unstable, a little upset, so he can be there to assist them.
Mm-hmm.
And he noticed that she was the one out of the group that was not doing well. So when she started ascending rather quickly, he had to grab a hold of her and slow her ascent and also keep his hand near her regulator to keep it in her mouth. Because the problem is when people get upset underwater, they're not under control anymore.
They start stripping all their equipment off.
Things can go wrong very quickly. So
yeah.
He doesn't want that equipment to come off of her. He's trying to keep her safe. And there's a problem. If you're in a certain depth of the water and you start coming up too quickly, it causes a problem.
The bends. You cannot just surface. You have to go to a certain depth level and wait for a certain amount of time. So you have to go up easy and slowly. You have to do everything underwater slowly and deliberately. You cannot do anything haphazardly. So he can't let her just go surface up because she'll have the bends. She will not depressurize correctly.
Right. And they know this is what happened because the dive master gave a statement to police and said, this is how it went. He said he had never seen someone so uncomfortable in the water. But as we've said, she really wants to learn how to dive because this is Gabe's passion and she loves Gabe.
Yeah, she wants to do it with him.
So I think she's thinking, I'll power through this. So by the time she gets to Australia, she's had about 10 dives under her belt and none in seawater.
All in pretty much large swimming pools or controlled environments.
And this is something Gabe may not have known about. Near the end of his training, he actually did get in seawater. And I think maybe there could have been an assumption on his part or who knows on other people's parts that she had been in seawater before.
Yeah.
As a diver, but she never did it. And
or maybe he just didn't have enough understanding that there's different environments. So if you're you know, if you're just jumping into, say, a bay or something that's very calm, hey, you're all right. But if you go somewhere else where it's not so calm and controlled, then you're totally in a different environment than what she's experienced. So he might just not have considered that.
Well, he did make sure she got the training. I mean, she went to the same place he did. So maybe the thought was, well, she's got the basics down. Mm-hmm. So when I go, I can help her.
Yeah.
The honeymoon, it's in Sydney, Australia. This couple, they're from Alabama. So they're going to travel from Alabama to Sydney, Australia, and it'll be a 2-week trip or so.
We're brought to you by ZipRecruiter. So the other day, Aaron and I were trying to get concert tickets to a show we really wanted to see. And I waited before I bought my ticket. And guess what? I missed my chance. And that's why you have to act quickly, or somebody else will get it instead. It's like hiring for your business. If you want to find the most talented people for your roles, you have to scoop them up before the competition does. So that's why the best way to do that is ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify top talent for your roles. And immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. Amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Take a moment to get a word from our sponsor, Field of Greens. I like eating healthy, and I've tried a lot of different supplements, I've tried juicing, and I've spent a lot of money and wasted a lot of time. And let me tell you, honestly, none of those things ever made me feel better. With Field of Greens, it's a superfood that gives you nutrition the way nature intended. It's packed full of organic fruits and vegetables, not extracts. And when you're getting those nutrients, you can sleep better, notice things like your hair and your nails feel stronger, helps with digestion. You just feel better overall. My favorite flavor is the strawberry lemonade. I have a feeling you're going to love this product the way I do. But if for some reason you don't like it, they give you a 100% money-back guarantee. Plus, you can get 15% off your first order and free rush shipping. Visit fieldofgreens.com and use the promo code GenY. Promo code GenY at fieldofgreens.com. fieldofgreens.com. Go check it out.
Now, the company that Gabe gets a hold of is Mike Ball Dive Expedition. And they have these boats, and they take people out on these diving trips. And the boat they'll be going out on is the Spoil Sport.
Mm-hmm.
There's a man, his name's Wade Singleton. He's the dive director of the boat, and he's basically in charge. And they have other people aboard to help.
Yeah.
But essentially, he's the man in charge. They're on the Spoil Sport. The Spoil Sport's going to dock near a wreck. It's an historic wreck.
Sunken ship.
It's the SS Yungala. And it was built in 1903, and it sunk in 1911 due to a cyclone.
Oh, interesting.
All 122 people aboard died in that cyclone. I guess it's a great wreck to go and visit because it's pretty much intact.
Mm-hmm.
So you can actually swim down there and go through the ship. And of course, there are sea snakes down there. There are bull rays.
All kinds of wildlife.
Right. So, and then there, of course, there's coral reefs and things. So it's beautiful, I guess.
How this is set up is they have an anchor line that the divers will follow down. And then once they get to the bottom, they let go of the line and then they go exploring. And they go check out the wreck, check out whatever they want. Then when they are done, they can go back up the anchor line. Now, another boat shows up and drops another anchor line. So there's two anchor lines, to my knowledge, during this little outing. So they go down the one anchor line and then they can go up either one when they return. And as soon as they let go of this anchor line, they start moving because of the currents under the water.
Right. Some people may not be aware of this, but the water's not still. And the current can be, it could be a different speed depending on the conditions. So it could be a minor current or it could be a strong current. Mm-hmm. So if it's, what would that be, like a 1 kilometer current? I mean, how do they rate these things?
Yeah, I forgot the
half
actual.
A kilometer, kilometer, yeah. 1.5 kilometers, 2 kilometers.
It's sort of like wind speed in a way, but totally different.
Well, and so this tourist group, they understand this. And if the current gets too strong, they will actually not allow anyone to dive at that time. And then there's this other area they'll take them to. They have backup plans, you know? So they'll say, oh, I'm sorry, we can't go to the wreck at the moment because the currents are too strong.
It's too dangerous.
Yeah. Right.
And you know, you can think about ski slopes. You got your black diamond slope. That's the most treacherous. And then you have your, you know, medium slopes, and then you have your easy bunny slopes that I'm on. I would never go on the high end expert slope because I would kill myself. So this wreckage that they're at, it's not a bunny slope. It's probably considered an expert dive at this point. But, you know, most of the people that are going out there, they are experienced divers, so it's okay.
Well, how do they know this? Well, this company, they interview the people that are going, and they'll talk to them, and they'll say, how many dives do you have? Mm-hmm. Well, Gabe's saying, hey, I've got 56 dives.
But he's not saying that it's 56 that are recent.
Well, check this out. They have their own policy about these things. Mm-hmm. And they have it color-coded so that depending on what skill level a diver you are, that will determine which diver access points you can go to.
Okay.
Because some of the diver access points are considered more advanced and some are more novice. Safer. So they have 3 codes. They're green, yellow, and red. And green is for if you have 14 or less dives. Mm-hmm. Well, you're green. Sorry, you can't go to the red access point because you're just not advanced enough. Now, yellow is between 15 and 49 dives. And the red is for divers who have more than 50 dives. They have 50 plus dives on their record, and they're more comfortable. They know what they're doing. So they still have people around them that can assist them, but they know what they're doing. So there's something curious about this because when Gabe and Tina are interviewed, they're interviewed together, which I guess is not policy. Policy is you're supposed to interview people separately so you get their version instead of having people look at each other and check. You know, like in other words, this is a good scenario. Tina and Gabe are sitting together. And let's say Gabe's like, oh, I'm good. I'm 56 dives. Oh, well, you qualify. You're red then. Good. Now, they didn't ask him what kind of dives those were, you know, because if you go by just seawater dives, he doesn't hit 50 and he probably doesn't hit 40. And does he hit 30? No. So where would he be at? They say he'd qualify for yellow probably based on his actual dive record. That's between his logbook and his computer, his dive computer. So imagine Tina sitting there. This is their honeymoon. This is something he wants to do. Imagine they're sitting there and she answers, I have 10 dives.
Now they can't.
Or I have 11 dives.
And they can't go together now.
Yeah, they can't go together. She can't go to the young gal. She can't go to where he's going. What does that do for the honeymoon? She wants to go with him.
She won't go by herself. She knows that she's not going to do that. So
are these people marked as being green, yellow, or red?
No.
What happens is they're fine. They don't even follow their own policy at this point.
So they just sent 2 inexperienced divers down the black diamond slope.
Well, that's just the thing is you have this assumption, like you said, the guy has 56 dives. He took training courses. He has certification in 4 different diving courses. Shouldn't he qualify? Mm-hmm. I mean, where's the problem?
Yeah.
Look, even if you accept that, even if you think this guy's a great diver somehow, what about Tina? How much time has she spent in seawater? Seawater is completely different than freshwater. Mm-hmm. She has never been in seawater as part of a dive before, and she's going to, like you said, Black Diamond Slope.
Yeah.
You can already see where this is headed.
Bad.
This is not safe for her.
No.
They've got their access point chosen. They're getting in the water. He gets, I'd say, between 1 meter and 2 down. She doesn't even hit 4 feet before he's turning around. He's going to come back up. Now, he says his dive computer is beeping at him.
Messing up.
That's a problem. So, of course, he's communicating with people. She's up too. They appear a little, depending on who you ask, they either look alarmed or they've just exerted themselves a little bit. Because it takes some effort, you know, to get in and out of the water. And
yeah,
they don't do this all the time, remember. So it has to do with the computer sensing the air in his tank. And if it's not reading it correctly, it's going to beep. There's an issue.
Kind of important.
Yeah. So he has a reason to come up. This is dive one. They come back up and he messes with the battery or batteries. Okay. So there's some discrepancy here. Like he says something about the battery being in backward.
Mm-hmm.
But he has a transmitter that's on the tank and he has a wristwatch dive computer. They both have a battery in them.
Mm-hmm.
He may have actually messed with the batteries in both compartments because how much does he know about the dive computer system?
Yeah.
So he may have thought, I need to check the batteries in both. Now, according to Gabe, the orientation of the battery is kind of tricky because it's not as clear. It's not like when you open up the back of a remote-controlled car and it's really clearly labeled in there. Yeah. They've got a little diagram in there. It's not like that with these.
And it's like a flat battery, I think. So you could easily flip it over.
So they're on board the boat for about 10 to 15 minutes before they go back down.
For the second attempt.
This is the second attempt. Now, by this time, this other boat that you mentioned earlier has docked and more people are getting out. So how many people are really in the area?
Up to 60 divers.
Right. This is a tourist spot. This is where people go to dive and explore. So it's not as though it's just a handful of people here. They start going down and they're following, as you said, they have like sort of a cable. But, and here's where the scenario happens. We have two scenarios that could be happening, okay? Because we know she's going to die. How does this happen? According to Gabe, they are at their diver access point, and they're going down, and they're going over the top of the wreck. And they wear these, they're kind of like vests. They're called BCDs. They're buoyancy compensy devices. They're buoyancy compensation devices.
And in this uses the air from your tank to fill up these bags on your chest, and it fills up with air. Therefore, it makes you rise, or you're weighted down, so if you let the air out of them, you sink.
Right. You can achieve neutral buoyancy. Because when you go diving, you actually put on some weights to help weigh you down so you can go down smoother. And then you have your BCD that can help, they can neutralize the weight.
Yeah. When I go swimming in a swimming pool or a lake, I am naturally buoyant. I cannot dive down very deep. Like I have to force myself. So I would have to have weights in order to sink to the bottom. And this vest is what brings them back up.
And if you think about it, you've gone to one of these, what do they call them? The salt.
Salt floats. Isolation chamber with the salt float, you know, where you have 900 pounds of, you know, Epsom salt that you're just floating on in salt water. You are more naturally buoyant.
So they're going down, but what he notices is that she's not just going down along this cable. She's actually dropping too.
Yeah.
So he has to grab a hold of her. He starts inflating his BCD.
To compensate because he's now holding on to his wife.
Right. And he reaches out to grab her, like I think maybe on her shoulder or something too. And then she throws her arms out and she hits his mask. Dislodging his mask. So when you dislodge your mask, that seal is broken, water comes in, and it messes up your mask. You can't see at this point.
It doesn't matter if you can't knock the mask off really because it is strapped to your head, but you can absolutely break the seal, which allows water, seawater, to get in. And if you've never been in seawater, let me tell you, it feels great on your eyes. it stings like hell.
So he's got to clear his mask using basically the air from his regulator, right?
Mm-hmm.
So he resets it up. And at this point, he notices he had to let go of her to do this. And he notices that his regulator's gone, like the mouthpiece part of it. It's still there, but the mouthpiece part that fits into your mouth, it's gone. Now, on your BCD, which is attached to your tank, they actually have a backup regulator. They call it an octopus. So he puts that on and puts it in his mouth, and he's fine. But now he sees she's now down about 5 to 10 feet below him. That's varying accounts.
She's sinking because she hasn't hit her BCD and she's weighted with 20 pounds of weight. Some people say she was overweighted, but she's not allowing herself to become buoyant neutral. Is that it?
She's probably overweighted from what I understand.
Yeah.
I think she was probably supposed to have about 12 pounds and she had 20. Now, she didn't use her BCD. Gabe says that he motioned to her to inflate it.
Yeah.
And she went to do so, but it didn't seem to be working or something. And I've heard you have to hold it to get it to start working.
You can't just hit the button real quick.
Right. And if you're in a stress situation, she may not have done it correctly. Now, she's going down. So he turns himself over to dive after her, because even if someone's 10, 15 feet away, it should just take up to a few kicks and you can get to them.
Yeah.
In theory. But the problem is he can't do it. He says he can't catch up to her.
Well, wait a second. He'd been filling up his BCD to compensate for her weight. So he's literally trying to dive down with a full bag of air on his chest. This isn't going to work.
He had inflated it to hold her up, basically. Yeah. And now he doesn't have a hold of her. He could let out the air to go after her.
If he had thought of it.
If he thought of it. Now he's thinking, I have to go back up. So he turns around and he starts heading up. His dive computer recorded a maximum ascent rate alarm as well as a maximum breathing rate alarm during his ascent. So some people have said he didn't swim up fast enough, that he took his time. Now, the reason they say that is because the person who would bring Tina up from the bottom is Wade Singleton, and his ascent rate was faster, a time and a half faster.
But this is the dive master of the...
Well, he's the dive director.
The dive director who's the most senior veteran guy in the water right now.
He's the senior man on that boat.
So he knows his limits of how fast he can ascend.
But they say that Gabe didn't move fast enough. Now, we already said that his vest was overinflated, possibly. And he may have been a little overweighted as well.
Yeah.
So if you put those two things together... his ascent rate might not have been as good, because he's basically in a race against, you know, if you compare the two times, he's in a race against a man who's an expert, who knows what he's doing. He wasn't out there overinflating his BCD because he wasn't with a novice. He was out there just doing his thing. So
now here's the moment, though, that we have to look at is, why didn't he just grab another diver and say, I need your assistance, I need your help, point at his wife? Why didn't he get somebody that was closer besides the boat that was, you know, 40 something feet above his head, however many meters that is? I should say meters, because our Australian fans want to hear that.
he had gotten down to a depth of 56 meters.
Okay. So that's actually way more than 40 feet.
It's a good distance down.
Yeah.
And he says he does, you know, after these alarms go off, he's actually trying to get a hold of somebody. He says he sees an Asian male and he's motioning to that person, but doesn't get any response from them. We can't even guess as to why.
Because it might just be another tourist guy that's diving and he doesn't know what to do. He can't really do anything. And so Gabe makes this decision, if you follow his story, that he just decides to go up to the boat to get help.
Yeah, there's a man who is the assistant to Wade Singleton. That man is the one that Gabe sees when he gets up to the boat.
Mm-hmm.
And Gabe tells him that his wife's down there. And this man will grab Gabe and will tell him, you are not going back down there. Now, the reason this happens, they say, is because if you have a situation where someone's in danger, possibly dying, you can't send someone else who could possibly be in danger and die as well down there after them.
Yeah, because he's going to see his own wife and he's going to be in a panic situation. So that makes sense.
So he doesn't allow him to go down. Now, while this is happening, Wade Singleton is already in the water. And as he's swimming, he notices Tina at the bottom. At this point, he doesn't know who it is, but he sees a diver at the bottom, arms out. They're just on the bottom. So goes down there and starts trying to see what he can do, see if she's responsive to anything. And will take her up. And of course, once he ascends at a faster rate than Gabe did, according to his dive computer. Now, should run through real quick what a dive computer does. It provides real-time dive information. So time, depth, ascent time. It's
oxygen use.
It's a really handy thing because, you know, back in the old days, people would just log everything using, you know, what they would say, analog gauges and things like that. They would write things down. Here, you get real-time information. So as you're doing everything, you can see it as it happens. So it's important.
It's your Fitbit for when you're underwater.
Right. But the dive computers that Gabe and Tina were using weren't top of the line at that time for 2003. Because they were a little older.
Yeah.
His was more sophisticated, but it, you know, it doesn't have like the memory that the modern ones have. So it didn't take like a real time recording of everything. So it was more like snapshots. And it would only record a dive if you went past 4 feet.
Mm-hmm.
So if you just hung around on top of the water, it was never going to record anything. That's not really the whole story because they have a dead woman on their hands and Gabe's the husband and he was the only one with her.
Yeah.
So what's that old saying? If someone dies, who's the first person they look at?
Their spouse.
Their spouse. Well, this is a new couple. This is, they were together 2 years, then they got married. I mean, they went on this trip within 10 days of being married. So what's the story some people say is how this really went down?
They say that he'd planned the murder of his wife and that before they even went on this trip, he was already planning it. He was asking her to increase her life insurance and make him the beneficiary. He also bought her a rather expensive engagement ring and planned to murder her. So once they got down, he embraced her in a bear hug, turned off her air supply on the tank, waited for her to pretty much die from lack of oxygen, turned the air back on, and then left her body to sink and surfaced and said, "My wife had an accident and I need help." That's in a nutshell. So he's going to now collect on the life insurance policy and get his engagement ring back and not have to be with her. And the life insurance policy, I've heard a lot of different amounts for that. I've heard anywhere from $130,000 to $260,000.
Yeah, I heard that it was between $33,000 and $120,000.
Yeah. So lots of different numbers out there. I even heard different prosecutors. One referred to it as 160 and another one referred to it as 240. So it's, let's just say that I think it was over 100,000. So it's not like a million. It's not a lot, but it's enough. You know, I mean, hey, you know, crack dealers kill each other for $5 every day. So maybe this guy's going to kill his wife for $100,000 to $200,000. Gives him a motive. And he's going to get this engagement ring back that he spent money on. Now, why do people think he murdered her? Should we get into that? Of his actions after the incident?
Well, no, it's a combination of things. When you look at the dive computer information and the fact that he didn't go up as quickly, that there are divers who said they saw him holding, like they described diver one and diver two, which would be those two people.
Yeah.
One of them actually said it looked like he was holding her in a bear hug. You combine that with people saying that he was playing cards on the boat trip back to shore.
And he didn't ride in the same boat as his wife's body. He went to another, he chose to go to another boat to ride back because he didn't want to be around her.
Yeah, he didn't even, when they were trying to resuscitate her, see if they could bring her back, he didn't go to her. And then after she was buried back at home, her family would leave these flowers and they would disappear.
Off of her gravestone.
Yeah, right off of her gravestone. And then they started wiring them in where they would be really difficult, to take out. And then someone was still getting them out. And so, you know, I think it was the police set up a camera and discovered it was Gabe, especially, you know, they were wired in at this point. He was bringing bolt cutters with him. He would walk out there with bolt cutters, cut the flowers out, and throw them in the trash and mm-hmm. walk away.
And he also had a Christmas card of him and Tina. And the caption was, "Who's that good-looking guy?" Or
it was, "Who's that sexy guy standing next to Tina?" Yeah. Oh, that's me.
Yeah. Kind of narcissistic. He also had a picture of Tina standing next to a sign.
What was happening was this, he had a Christmas party, I think yeah. it was, wasn't it? And so people would come over and he would point out her picture.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he'd say something like, "Look at this great picture of Tina."
Mm-hmm.
And then next to her was the sign that said, "Caution, drowning."
Yeah. Kind of poor humor.
What would you think? But let's say it was your sister
mm-hmm.
that she drowned. And this is the guy that was with her at the time. And he's saying this. What's your first thought?
What an ass. And that's not funny. And can't you be sensitive to the loss of my loved one?
Yeah, I don't even know what to say. You can't defend it. There's nothing you can say that defends what he's saying there. Mm-hmm. And furthermore, where is this coming from? I've heard people try to defend it. They'll say it's, and he doesn't have very many defenders, but
no.
They'll say that everyone handles grief differently. They mm-hmm. handle loss differently.
Today's episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Some of us spend our lives wishing we had more time, but time for what? If time was unlimited, what would you use it for? If you need to squeeze a special thing into your schedule, do you even know what's important to you and how to make that a priority? Well, with therapy, you can find out what matters to you so you can do more of it. We all need to vent sometimes. We all need to talk about some of the things that have happened to us. And I'll tell you right now, your friends might be sick of hearing about it. So take the burden off them. Let a professional help you. Sometimes it's as simple as just getting something off your back and letting somebody else know so you can feel validated and move on with your life. If you're thinking about starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/GenY today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/GenY.
I think his actions are, I take them for what they are. I think it's pretty in poor taste. I think it's a little despicable. And I think he is a narcissist. And I think he has a very weird, dry personality. So humor comes off really poorly from this man. And why would you make humor of your dead wife? But we get emails every day about my giggling and laughter on this podcast. Does that mean that I could be a murderer because I laugh at inappropriate times? It doesn't correlate to guilt for me. He says that he got rid of the plastic bouquet of flowers because Tina didn't like plastic flowers. She liked real flowers. This is his explanation. I don't even believe his explanation.
I don't believe it either.
I think he hated Tina's parents because they hated him. And this was his way of saying, screw you. You don't get to put flowers on Tina's grave. I'm not going to let you. It's a little rivalry going here, right?
Right. It's pretty clear that her parents did not like him. Like, his parents were pretty welcoming of the other side, but Tina's side was never welcoming of Gabe and his side. So we can already see where there's a problem. And he tried on two occasions to get her father to okay the marriage, and he never would give the okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now you can say that's his right, and sure it is, but it shows there's a problem there.
There's tension between them.
There's tension.
There was one more allegation that he made an inappropriate comment at her funeral about
her breasts.
Her breasts. It's kind of hearsay, but at the same time, I can't say that I disbelieve it. I'm sure he might have said it. He doesn't seem like a guy that really understands what's coming out of his mouth or his actions. He just doesn't get that other people are looking at him like, you are sick.
There's a lot of hearsay in this case. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of things that are said that are not true. There are things said by people who are not qualified to speak on certain things. So when you start going through these matters and situations, just take like the card playing. We had one person say that he saw Gabe playing cards.
Yeah.
With other people. Then we had another person saying, yes, Gabe played cards. And then when they expounded upon that, they said, oh, well, I forget who it was, but maybe it was their dad or who, it was the original person who had said it.
Mm-hmm.
So they were just going off of what they had been told by someone else. They didn't actually see it. And when you get down to it, no one really saw him playing cards.
No.
So that's something that's very, very
inflammatory.
It's very inflammatory. Another issue is that he wasn't going to the boat where Tina was being taken care of.
Yeah.
They were trying to revive her, resuscitate her. He didn't go to that other boat. Well, that can be explained because he didn't know she was on that boat. It's not like when you're out there, you know everything that's going on every single boat that's in the water.
He didn't know that Wade had brought her up to the other boat. And Wade didn't know what boat he was on, so he couldn't bring her up to the boat that Gabe was on.
Or even if he did, he may have just brought her to the nearest boat.
Yeah.
That he was at.
So, because he's trying to rescue her.
Right. This isn't about, oh, we have to get them together. Why does that matter? What matters is there was a woman in the water who was 80 to 90 to 100 feet down. I think her dive computer showed she reached a depth of almost 90 feet.
Yeah.
So she was well down there. What are you going to do? He has to bring her up, try and resuscitate her. Now, at some point, Gabe is told that she's being worked on. But he said that he didn't want to go wherever she was at because he didn't know if he could handle watching that.
Yeah.
This is where if you don't feel any empathy for him and you already hate him and you think he doesn't deserve any sympathy, this is where you're going to slide toward the he's a murderer and put him away.
Why wouldn't he go to his wife that's in trouble? And I get that.
You won't be able to accept that this is someone who has their limits and can't watch someone being worked on.
Yeah.
One of the things that you've brought up is you say, well, sometimes you laugh when you're nervous.
Mm-hmm.
Well, some people can't watch certain things happen. I've met several people that say they can't watch like their husband who's got a bad cut, can't see it stitched up. They just can't do it.
Yeah.
Do they love their husband? Yes. Do they want them to be fixed? Sure. Do they want them to survive? Yeah. But they can't watch that. They can't watch blood spill. They can't watch a wound being closed with sutures. That's just not their thing.
We have a couple friends that said when they watched the birth of their son or daughter, they had to leave the operating room because they could not see their wife and all the blood and everything, especially if they had a cesarean. They could not watch that because it was too much for them. So I totally get it. But at the same time, I totally get why didn't he want to go to his wife, but maybe he didn't have that opportunity because at this point they're on separate boats and the priority is getting her medical attention and not getting them together. That's not the priority. The priority is trying to revive her.
The other thing is too, you'll notice if you read up on this case, there are people that say, I was there. I know he did it. Here are the things that I saw. The interesting thing is these people gave certain statements to the police that are different than what they say now.
You know what? I can totally see that. Like some guy comes up and he says, my wife's in trouble and she dies. And I just think, why didn't you try to help her? Why didn't you dive down there and help that woman? It's your wife. What on earth are you thinking?
Well, they're not even doing that at the time. At the time, they're giving a different statement. Mm-hmm. Later, they're saying what you're saying there.
Yeah.
Later, they're going, oh, wait a minute.
This allegation comes up, suspicions rise, and now they remember it differently, or you're not getting their true initial reaction.
And original story? This is something that comes up a lot. So Justin and I actually spoke this week about the 16 versions that he's given. His story of what happened with
Gabe,
me and Tina.
Gabe's different statements, as they claim.
Right. And I was telling Justin, well, he's changed his story 16 times. And Justin's like, no, it's like two or three times. And so we did some digging, or at least I did some more digging, and I found a chart. And it actually lists the person who gave the statement, what they heard Gabe say in relation to what, and it's all charted. So you can actually go across and say, oh, this is about the dive computer. This is about Tina dropping. This is about the mask.
Real easy to find a discrepancy.
And here's the deal. You can see how there are 16 versions, but there are versions of no real importance in terms of they all basically mean the same thing.
He never 180s on it. This isn't like, oh, I was at the apartment and, or, oh, I wasn't at the apartment, or I tried to help her. And then the next statement is I didn't try to help her. They're all in the same core, the same vein of the same story. They're just slightly different flavors. And if Aaron and I did this same podcast 16 times in a row, it's going to sound a little bit different each time, although we're trying to portray the same exact story. So is he changing his story, or is he just retelling it and it just comes out slightly different?
Or he's not changing it, but try this. If they've played this game in the past, you can actually take a line of 16 people and you could walk to each one and whisper in their ear.
Well, that's the telephone. The telephone game.
It's the telephone game. You tell each person something, and then you'll notice not everyone tells it exactly as you did.
Yeah. So he's telling the story to different people, and they're recording it. So you have possibly up to 16 people recording his statement, and they just might write it down a little bit differently or whatever.
You really can't get any clearer than that. There's a whole question of a trial. Australia wants to try him for murder.
After this incident, he goes back to the States.
He goes back with Tina and his mother.
Yeah.
Her name's Glenda. They go back to Alabama. They will, you know, he will bury his wife.
Mm-hmm.
We already told you about the gravesite vandalism.
Australia wants to charge him, but they don't do this for many, many years.
It takes a little while, doesn't it?
4 years. And then they open an inquest, an investigation on him for this whole incident. But why did it take 4 years for them to do this? I mean, to me, you strike when the iron's hot. There's no question of, oh, we got to go round up suspects. We got to investigate. This is, we know he was with her at the bottom of the ocean. She's dead. So it's either him or an accident. There's no, so what do you think triggers this whole inquest?
Well, it's really obvious. There's her parents, again.
Who hate Gabe.
Right.
And you know what? They hate him with good reason. Okay, I'll say it. They hate him, and I understand why they don't like him. I totally get it.
Well, I would say I can get maybe why they do. I just don't know if they really saw anything in the time that they knew him that was like what we see later with the gravesite, with the Christmas card, with the comments, with the burial.
Their disapproval turned to dislike, and then when their daughter dies under his watch, it turns to hate. It's obvious.
Right. So he's the killer.
Yeah.
And they don't let this lie. They start putting the pressure on. Not only do they get Australia fired up, because Australia wants to prosecute him,
mm-hmm.
and they do. In fact, what does Gabe do? Because Gabe's in Alabama. Australia wants him prosecuted. What happens?
They want to charge him with murder. And it goes back and forth for, I think it's about a year, you know, give or take a few months. And Gabe ends up returning to Australia on his own accord. He didn't really have to. Don't know what the extradition rules really are between America and Australia, but really, he went back to face justice on his own. And he ends up pleading to a manslaughter charge, meaning that he didn't do enough to aid or assist with the situation. So he gets charged with manslaughter and sentenced to 18 months. That's what he ends up serving is 18 months.
No, he gets a sentence of 1 year.
Yeah.
They take everything into account.
True, true. Sorry.
In other words, this manslaughter charge, you know, it's murder, but what they're basically saying is it's murder because you didn't help enough. So it's a year.
Yeah.
But that's not the end of the story. He ends up getting another 6 months tacked on. And so he ends up serving 18 months.
Mm-hmm.
After the 18 months, he wants to go back to Alabama.
Yeah.
Well, there's an attorney general in Alabama who's thinking, you didn't do enough time.
18 months is not enough.
And they're saying, you know what? Australia had a crack at it, but we can have a crack at it because he plotted the murder in Alabama. He planned this trip, so they tack on a kidnapping charge too. Now, why do they put a kidnapping charge on? Because they say that by tricking her, by telling her, oh, we're going on this beautiful trip, but actually the trip's going to be, you know, it's going to end with your demise. He's lying to her. He's kidnapping her because she's not really going where she thinks she's going. She's going against her will. She wouldn't have gone there if she knew she was going to be killed.
Yeah.
So they tack on a kidnapping charge. This all goes through the grand jury, gets an indictment. They get to make their case.
Hold on. Alabama is wanting to charge him with a capital offense, which carries the death penalty.
And they want that.
And Australia says, we're not going to send him back because we don't agree with that. We gave him 18 months for a manslaughter charge, which was more than what that charge typically carried. And he, on his own accord, went there. Now, they're not wanting to extradite him. So, the Alabama prosecutor has to drop that as a punishment, has to drop the death penalty. Then, Australia says, we'll send him back to you now. So he comes back, and this is the weird thing, is they claim it's not double jeopardy because it is a different government charging him, and they say that they have jurisdiction because he hatched this plan in the States at the time of their engagement or their wedding and planned this in the States. Why they can charge him with the murder and not simply conspiracy or something like that is because our government can choose to do whatever it wants, whenever it wants, and interpret the law how it sees fit for its own purpose. And as much as whether he's at fault, he served his time in Australia. That's what they deemed. How on earth the American government or the Alabama state can say they can charge him with murder also? Even if you think this guy's absolutely guilty, you should be worried about that behavior of our government, that they can charge you with whatever they want and they can interpret that you conspired to do this, therefore they can charge you with murder. I can't even wrap my head around that.
Well, I think it would be justified to some people because, you know, over here we say, oh, well, we don't condone torture. But if you tell someone, oh, we have a Muslim extremist who has beheaded several American soldiers, they're like, torture away. And in this case, they'll say, well, this guy committed murder and he got away with it because he only served 18 months. That's a pittance. I mean, that's a small amount of time for the death of this young woman. And they'll say, well, you know, if Australia is going to fail, we're there to pick up the pieces and do something, create some justice.
We rule and apply the law based on emotion, not based on process.
And that's more important to a lot of people.
Yeah.
So I get that. But here's what happens. So the prosecutor and the defense attorney get to air this case out in court.
Mm-hmm.
And the amazing thing is the judge hears everything and that's it. We're throwing this case out.
There's not enough evidence.
He tells the prosecutor, you have nothing. You have nothing. You have made no case here. Now, why is that? Again, you've already said it. It's emotion. We already have a guy that looks like a jerk from any angle you look at it. He looks like a royal jerk. Then you have all these people who figure, well, he was down there alone with her. Nobody else was really paying attention. So they're thinking he had to have done it. His motive, the money. But get this, while they're airing that case out in court, what are they doing as far as motive? What can they say is the motive here in this case? It's money, right? What's the real money issue here?
The father's the beneficiary. She never changed it to Gabe. We don't even know if he actually asked her to change it or not. It's really hearsay. So if he's planning on murdering her, wouldn't you think he would check?
It'd be slightly important, maybe.
Yeah. I mean, maybe he's an idiot and he didn't check. Also, the judge brings up the engagement ring. I might offend any of you that work at a diamond ring store right now, but engagement rings, diamond rings, gold rings are the worst investment you could ever invest in. Like, he's going to get this ring back and resell it? What? Like, as soon as you buy that ring from a store and walk out of it, that ring is not worth anything that you just paid for it. There's just so many problems with the ring being part of the motive.
The amount of money spent on the trip, the amount of debt that she carried, far surpasses any kind of money that could have been gained by him. When they did the math on this, he comes out way in the red. It's really bad. This is not a good scenario for him. By murdering her, he ends up in a worse spot, not just legally, but financially. This is a bad move. The judge made it clear. There's absolutely zero motive here. Why would you marry someone, go on this big trip, spend all this time with them, and then murder them? There's no financial motive here. There really isn't.
Tina's father and family absolutely thinks Gabe's guilty, and I get that. And one of the things that her father says after the whole thing's thrown out is, well, the judge didn't allow all this evidence to be heard. And I just thought, because the judge listened to it himself and decided it was worthless. It didn't even get that far where he allowed the evidence in or out. He threw the whole thing out. Here's the problem with this, is even if Gabe absolutely killed her, he did not turn off her air supply, because when they check her tank, they check her computer, she had used way more air than a normal diver would have or should have, because she was in a panic state. So we know she panicked because she used too much air. So if he turned off her air, she probably would have used less air. Nobody saw Gabe with their own eyes turn this tank off and turn it back on. All they saw, or they think they saw, was they might have been embraced briefly. That's it.
But that's explained because Wade embraces her.
Yeah.
And that's where the bear hug statement comes from. It doesn't come from people seeing. See, it's a confusion thing.
Yeah. Is that Gabe or is that Wade? You're wearing a face mask, goggles, all this stuff.
Like, there's no real-time CNN update going through these people's diving masks.
They don't know who
they're
seeing.
They have no idea what's going on.
And maybe it was Gabe, because he was in that moment where he was trying to help her, grab a hold of her, and she knocked into him, knocked his face mask. Who knows? It could have been Wade. It could have been Gabe. But it doesn't prove that he turned this oxygen tank off. There's zero evidence. I look at it this way. You can't check fingerprints underwater. You can't. There's no evidence there. You could say this was the perfect murder if you like. Even if he did do it, you absolutely could not prove it. And I think the prosecutor's theory is absolutely wrong about the turning the oxygen tank off and back on. You can't prove it. You can allege it. You can suggest it. But you can't prove it. There's no evidence to it.
Well, that's one of the other things, is they say, well, how would she have drowned? She had plenty of air and she had a regulator in her mouth. Well, my first thought was, well, is it possible to drown with a regulator in your mouth? And I found out it is, because just like the ski mask, you need to keep your mouth sealed around the regulator. If you open it up and you start yelling, all that water will rush into your mouth.
And the regulator can actually stay in between your teeth. But if your lips break the seal around the regulator, you're letting water in and you can drown. And she drowned. She didn't die from a lack of oxygen. She died from water in her lungs. So that kind of goes in the face of the prosecutor's theory. Unless you assume he turned the air off and then she panicked more and let water in. But
this has been something that's been tried in the media, outside of the courtroom, and inside of the courtroom where all the evidence is allowed to be in. You've had the Australian court say this isn't an outright murder. They agreed to the manslaughter charge. Then you had an Alabama judge. He doesn't give two craps about what Australia thinks. He heard all of the evidence and he said there's nothing here. I went to diver forums where people that dive, scuba dive all the time were debating this. I noticed a trend, and it happened with me. When I first looked into this case, when I just did the bare minimum reading articles on it, I thought he did it. He had to have killed her, because they were down there alone. He's a great diver. He's got 4 certifications. He's been diving since 96. He knew what he was doing. He could have easily kicked down and got her. He didn't do that. But once you start learning the real facts of this case, as seen through the eyes of as people who understand what really happened, then it starts to become apparent that this became a witch hunt, all based on the pressure from her family to get someone to pay for her death.
And his behavior, which I absolutely think was inappropriate.
Well, the short list here is she was not a swimmer. She had a few
panicked moments
while she was training.
Yeah.
And this is something that's, the police have the statements from the instructors. They said, this is what happened. She was visibly shaken. She was upset. She couldn't handle it. But she was bound and determined to try and become a diver for the sake of this man she loved. So really, I mean, she put herself in danger here. And Gabe put her in danger a little bit because he didn't really, I mean, they should have spent a lot more time diving before they went to Australia. This was an opportunity.
The diving company should have been way more cognizant of who they were letting into that water that day.
Here's the thing. When you run a business, you have certain responsibilities.
Absolutely.
This diving company and Wade Singleton, the man that brought her up, you know, he looks like a hero. But when you actually stop and think, what happened here? Just like you said, with the different slopes, you know, if you're a novice or if you're an intermediate, if you're an advanced skier, you don't ski on the same slopes. They don't have a one fits all everywhere. They have different types of slopes, just like in the water. When you're going diving, they have, you know, depending on your skill level, you might need to stay away from certain areas. This company was aware of it. They had their own policy. It's called the Safe Scuba System. They did not follow their own policies, their own guidelines. Because she was such a novice, they were supposed to do some things prior to her even going anywhere. I think they were supposed to perform a dive with her so they could see where she was at. That was like an evaluation dive. They didn't do that. When they spoke with her, she only had 10 dives. They're letting her go on a red diver access point. That doesn't make any sense whatsoever. They're putting her in danger. They don't have one of their experts with her. They're considering Gabe an expert and they're letting him take her. They don't know him at all. It's not like they say, give us your logbooks. Let's see everything you got.
No.
They just take him at their word. They're responsible here. Tina Watson died because the company that she was with put her at risk. So they didn't just kill her, but by ignoring their own policies, which I bet they follow a lot more closely now, by ignoring those policies, they put her in danger. She should never have been down there because swimming in the ocean is completely different than being in a pool, and she was panicking in the pool.
And I will even lay a lot of that blame on Gabe that he shouldn't have taken her on that thing, but he just was along for the ride and he listened to what the company said. But he should have known better too.
Yeah, you can say that, but let's put it this way. If he had just taken her out on a boat and they scuba dive from there, you know what? Now I look at this a little differently.
Yeah.
Now he's responsible. Now I know she's an adult and she can make a call too, but now I see him more at fault.
Yeah.
But if you're going through a company and they've been in business since 1969, they should have been following their own policies.
Making the
call.
Their
policies are there for a reason.
Yeah.
And because they didn't follow them, she died.
I see parents run over their children in their driveways. I see people forget their babies in their cars. And they're not charged because it's a terrible accident. It's a tragedy. This guy allowing his wife to go down in treacherous waters that she shouldn't have been in. Yeah, he's kind of at fault, but do we charge him for that?
I mean, where's the malice here?
Yeah, it wasn't malice. It was a really bad decision, and he might have made a bad decision that he didn't try to rescue her. But really, is it his duty or is it the company's duty to rectify the situation and rescue the divers, the people that are under their watch? That really should have been the question in this case, not whether or not he did this, but... Here it is, man. I mean, this is ridiculous. As I thought David Bain was absolutely innocent, and I go into it and I think, oh, he absolutely did it. And in this case, I was like you. I thought Gabe was a POS and probably killed his wife. I don't think he did it. There is zero physical evidence that Gabe killed his wife. It's just an allegation and an assumption, and we cannot have the laws of our land built upon assumptions and allegations.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to the Generation Y podcast ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Business can mean a lot of things. For some, it's earning reports, the top MBA program, investments, but business isn't everything we do. Side hustles that explode into the next billion-dollar company.
I need to create my own product that I control what the marketing is for.
Unconventional ideas that change the world we live in.
AI is everywhere, with venture capital pouring in.
From Elon Musk,
he took a massive axe and swung it through Twitter's workforce.
To Taylor Swift,
she is unstoppable as her Eras Tour stimulated local economy.
Your favorite coffee shop down the street to the vacation house you rented last weekend. Whatever business means to you, Wondery is the destination for business podcasts. Listen to top business shows like How I Built This, Business Wars, The Best One Yet, Business Movers, and many more. Everything from top daily news.
There was more ranch dressing sold last year than ketchup and barbecue sauce.
We're buying the dip, literally.
To deep dives on the biggest successes and failures of our time.
20,000 people lost their jobs.
Wondery means business.